I've got a Miss Piggy screensaver on my computer that I look at all the time. It's got all the pictures of Miss Piggy that I've collected over the years, which is way more than a sane person should have. I was looking at it the other day and thinking, you know, when I hear that there's a new museum exhibit that somebody suggests I go and see, I usually say, oh, that sounds interesting. And then I don't actually go. But if there was an exhibit that was entirely pictures of Miss Piggy, I would be there immediately, like first in line. So I realized I like looking at Miss Piggy more than literally anything in the history of art. How does that happen to a person?
I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby.
Kissy, kissy, and welcome to another episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast. I'm Danny Horn, and this podcast chronicles my journey to learn everything there is to know about that divine swine, the incomparable Miss Piggy. We are talking today about Miss Piggy as a visual idea, and I am joined by two charming and gifted people. I've got product designer and art genius Jamie Carroll and filmmaker, designer, illustrator, and bon vivant, Peter Savieri.
Hi.
Let's start with Peter. Kissy, kissy. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. Why don't you tell the nice people about yourself?
Okay, so I'm a person who's done many things in my life, both to survive and to express myself creatively. But I do have a long history with Piggy obsession that parallels slash possibly rivals your own. My Muppet fandom started when I was very little, as a lot of it did for a lot of us. But I got particularly obsessed with Miss Piggy as the kind of standalone focus of glamour and extraness within a very extra crowd of characters. And yeah, I don't know. I think I got into her when at that sort of like boom time of the early 80s, when I was small enough and she was big enough. That it just captured my imagination. There were books coming out, calendars coming out, you know, Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, all of those things. And she just, yeah, it was at that time when sort of variety TV and that kind of design that was just an extreme stimulus to the gay imagination. Like everything glittered, everything was pink or gold or mauve or, you know, like everything was sort of fantasy.
Right.
So yeah, it's just the whole aesthetic of Miss Piggy and her particular kind of diluted brand of glamour just really captured my imagination. But yeah, so I've worked as a film designer for many years and as a kind of auxiliary brain to directors doing design and storyboards and things for film and ads and stuff. But I've also built puppets since I was a kid, do that less these days. And even I might have consulted on a few little products here and there. I've also designed characters for advertising for years. I guess my way into it was really not even a way into understanding and appreciating Miss Piggy. It's more like I can't find a way
And we should also mention here at the top that you actually
out.
have one of your artworks is in a Muppet movie.
Yes, yeah, I sort of forgot to mention that. Yeah, so I painted a prop portrait for the Pictures in My Head sequence in The Muppets, the Jason Segel Muppet movie. And I consulted on the build of the Miss Piggy puppet and gave a lot of feedback and pointers and things to the director, James Bovin, through the production designer on that. So, yeah, and on Gonzo to a degree as well. But the Miss Piggy was really the main focus of trying to address some things.
Making sure that we still have a quality Piggy.
Exactly.
Once she's getting into a big movie again, we needed to make sure we rein in some of the problems. So we'll talk about
Yeah,
that in a little bit.
for sure. Yeah.
Jamie, kissy kissy to you. How about
Ooh,
why don't you let's bring you in. Why don't you introduce yourself?
that's hard. Oof, a jack of many trades and an expert at not much, except if I were an expert at something or even close to that, it would be probably. Product design for the Muppets is such a niche. It really is. I fell into Palisades Toys in the early aughts. The product designer, developer, and vice president, Ken Lilly, that everybody knows, just gave me a shot, and it was hard work. It was a lot, a lot of long days. And I just learned trial by fire. And it was a lot of the stuff they were doing with figures would still be considered experimental.
Mm.
They really pushed the envelope, and sometimes it worked better than others. But they were, it's the collector's market. They weren't for children.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in the .com before it went bust, when a lot of younger people had a large disposable income. But, you know, there wasn't, the internet wasn't great. The, you know, the packages that the Jim Henson Company would send out for product design was not great. And it would took a long time to get to them. They were a small company. They still are a very small company. And they just, it's harder to get all that. And we helped make the book for, invent the legs for like characters and stuff that were never, you know, that were, we figured out the tail on Uncle Deadly. And of course, I never got to touch the pig back then. I tried to get on Miss Piggy. I tried and
I wish you had.
Things.
Yeah, there were some issues.
Yeah. But, well, the Henson Company wanted her, their book, their licensing art, they just went by that until they saw what Palisades could do.
Mm.
Once they saw, she never no longer had to have yellow hair and whatever. But Miss Piggy, I hate to say this, when she's pegged with the rest of the Muppets, this is an open secret. When she's pegged on cards with the rest of the Muppets, and the Henson Company told people this back then, she sells fewer units than the rest of them. But when you make a signature product for her, about her, she sells well. It's a weird, you know, juxtaposition of how she markets. But, you know, that's the toy design. Female figures, at least traditionally, do not sell as well unless it's Barbie and it's made specifically in a certain category. And that's kind of the paradox that is Miss Piggy products. And I'm glad when they get her right. And Peter and I worked on something. I had him help me when I worked for Diamond Select Toys for the Miss Piggy figure. And down to the shoes, which we can talk about later, he knows her. And if there were any person I would nominate to just have everything go through for Miss Piggy for products, it would be Peter. He doesn't need anybody else. He doesn't need help. He doesn't need anybody else. He knows exactly what she should look like. And that is a rare find. I think there's no one else that can do that.
It's a sickness.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
All right. Thank
I'm
you.
Really, especially since you've both endorsed each other during your
it's
intros.
True.
This is a very
tried
giving. I like this. It's a very sort of welcoming relationship that we're having right now, which is fantastic. As we get into this, this is going to be a fascinating conversation about the look of Miss Piggy, which is obviously very important to the three of us and to the world. We're going to get into this on kind of a granular level. So I'd like to remind everybody that when it comes to Miss Piggy, too far is actually the appropriate amount of far. So we are not going to worry about like a normal human perspective on this topic. We're just going to be massive Piggy fans, and that's the end of it. Also, before we start, this is an audio podcast, as you may have noticed, and we're going to be talking about visual things. If you would like visual aids, a lot of what we're going to be talking about can be found on Muppet Wiki at muppet.fandom.com. So go to Muppet Wiki. There's a couple pages straight up that I can specifically recommend. There's a Miss Piggy Through the Years page, which shows the development of the puppet over time. And there's a page called Piggy X Fashion for the later fashion collaborations. I wonder who put that page together. And as we go through, I may like cue you a little bit on like where to find some of this stuff on Muppet Wiki as well. So, to get started, one thing I think is amazing about Miss Piggy is how durable her image is. And I want to ask you guys about this. Like, Piggy's face has changed. We're going to get into this. Changed many, many times. Like, the eyes change. The shape of the head changes. Obviously, the hair and the outfit changes. On The Muppet Show, for the first four seasons, they redesigned Piggy's face, like, completely. Every season, it looks real different. But what's amazing to me is she's always recognizable as Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
No matter what
they do. But she's a Hollywood actress, so of course her face changes.
So I'll ask you, like, what do you think is that essence that shines through kind of no matter what she looks like at the time?
She's a pig. She's a pig in a wig. For me, I think, I mean, aside from her sort of like, you know, one of the appropriate animal bull in a china shop personality. Mm-hmm. She is visually, I think, I think she just, like, there are other sort of Lady Pig characters that have gone through the Muppets,
mm-hmm.
but there's something about Miss Piggy's essential kind of, it's hard because it's like very confirmation bias, because she's such the sort of template character for understanding what a pig in a wig should look like. But I think, yeah, there's just a few design elements that stay constant. There's the as much as they might be designed or built inconsistently, there's always the kind of the hair that's hopefully glamorous, not always. There's the eyes with you know the lush lashes and the sort of the sparkle and the deep blue. There's that sense of kind of like a lush voluptuous beauty to her that's pretty consistent. I feel like she does vary between being a womanly character to being more of a kind of a bit more, she's gone a bit more cutesy at times. She's kind of currently more that way. She's more, I feel like she's sort of like coded younger in the way that her face looks, even though she's older.
Right.
Only her surgeons know for sure. But yeah, and it has definitely been material changes that have been, you know, either the approach has changed or the expertise has changed or the actual materials have gotten cheaper at times. But yeah, in general, I feel like it's about the sort of silhouette and proportions.
The ears and the snout kind of shining through.
I mean, it's hard because you're talking about granular things. It's like, I want to say there are these broad stroke things that are the same. And there are definitely things that haven't changed. But at the same time, when I think of her ears, like 15 varieties of the way they've ever looked come through my head.
Yeah, I think the consistent performance, except for season one when she was tossed around a little bit, the consistent, having a consistent performer helped a lot. And the power with Miss Piggy, particularly back then, people try to retcon their modern ideas on classic media. And now they're saying, well, she was abusive and all these other things. She was a woman trapped in you know, the 70s world of what a woman was supposed to be. And that was chaotic. And she got out of it, you know, being herself. And she was a champion more than she was, you know, more of an oppressor of Kermit. She was, it was, you know, there's a special thing that she was at a certain time that was very important in media to see. Particularly,
and she was a flip,
young people.
Just to interrupt for one little second, she was also a flip of the Punch and Judy trope. So I think people missed that as well.
Oh, yes. And I think everything that they did with her was just, you know, back then was genius. I loved it. I really did love it. But, you know, and as you said, I think she's now coded younger. And I think maybe that's important because I think the Muppets, they're still evergreen and she reflects some of the times. But yeah, she's still old. I still remember her for the classic character that she is. No, I actually met a guy who was one of the puppet wranglers when Puppet Up came here. His name is Jürgen. I forget his last name. But after Puppet Up, I had a connection with a person who knew him. So we went for drinks afterward. And he talked to me about how Eric apologizes to him every time he performs Miss Piggy and her hair and everything. It's a mess. And he's like, here, fix this. I'm sorry. But that's what it is.
I mean,
you can't,
It's probably easier to detangle now that it's a cheap synthetic wig.
But yes.
Like those gorgeous real hair wigs would have been a nightmare to detangle after they've been thrown around.
Oh, but I, you know, I went on to detail how her ears were pinned and so many things, and I'm sure I bored him to death.
I always think there's going to be like
opportunity. You know, you have to.
Yes, absolutely. Thank God. Thanks, Danny, for this opportunity. At least it's a safe space. But yeah, I always have this feeling like when I was in the meeting for the Jason Segel movie for designing. So the way it sort of went down with the consultation is I was hired to do the painting initially, to do all the paintings, and then they decided to do the others digitally because they had to come to life, and then the Miss Piggy one was the last one that didn't have to do that. And I was obviously very glad that it was my favorite character that was going to be the one that I painted for real.
Yeah.
But during the meeting, it sort of just came up about their designs and about how they wanted to bring them back closer to their kind of classic form.
Mm.
And then I just started talking. And initially, the production designer was kind of just sitting there listening. And I wasn't sure if he was pushing a button under the desk for security, because I was just like, I'm just getting silence, but I'm just going to keep talking because this is a wild opportunity to get this message through.
What was the kind of thing that you were talking about? Give me an example.
I just, when they talked about the classic thing, I said, well, on that, you know, I feel like there are two characters that are particularly getting a lot of feedback that, you know, from fans and everything, where they're kind of like questioning the way they look, and those are Gonzo and Miss Piggy. And I talked a little bit about Gonzo just to try to pretend I wasn't only
really
there to
just
talk
obsessed
about Miss
with
Piggy.
Piggy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I, yeah, started talking about mainly about the wig and the eyes,
mm-hmm.
the eye placement, and the whole entire build of the eyes had,
right.
had altered so much. But then he got out kind of a notepad and started writing down what I was saying. And I was like, okay, good. I'm not like blowing my chances at both these jobs to sort of fight for the way she looks. But yeah, there were a few different things I talked about. I also tried to sort of inquire about what kind of existing sort of archival molds they might have for head molds.
Mm.
Because another issue, aside from the shape of the head, the length of the snout and all of these things that kind of alter the height of the forehead, that
right.
alter the way she looks, I feel like one of the other problems is that this is the time to bring it up. Maybe we could circle back to it, that she doesn't fit on Eric Jacobson's hand.
Mm.
And that's something that once you notice it, you can't unsee it. She has a sort of a goiter on one side of her chin that's the heel of his thumb.
Oh, gosh.
And it was never an issue, obviously, with Frank Oz, because she was designed for his hand. And I feel like there's been this slow movement. I don't know if Eric Jacobson has larger hands than Frank Oz or how it works, but because I feel like there's been this slow scaling down of her. She's been coded younger and also reduced in size in relation to Kermit. Like the real Miss Piggy puppet in person is kind of startlingly small.
Mm.
So I feel like that's a sort of side effect of that has been that
it doesn't
now
quite
is
fit
sort
on.
Of, yeah, she's, mm. she's so, you can see the hand through it. And obviously Kermit's whole face is made so the hand is his face, but with
right.
Piggy, she's all about this sort of like layers of voluptuous kind of chubbiness. Mm. And when you can see that, it sort of really distorts the view and takes you out of it a bit, at least once you've seen it. Yeah.
Didn't the head get bigger in Muppets Take Manhattan? Didn't they just not just change
did,
the hair
yeah.
from that fright wig that I hate, but they changed the head. I think the entire puppet got a little bigger.
Got
than that.
Bigger for that yeah. one. Yeah, maybe it did. I mean, I know
that's
a
yeah.
period. There's also the one of the Piggies I like the most in its design is a little bit big for Frank Oz's hands, which is the season
yeah.
5 Piggy. That's the one I like. The look of that Piggy is just gorgeous to me.
Do you want to like actually let's get into talking about this kind of chronologically?
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise
so that folks,
jump
yeah, this
place.
Is no, this is perfect.
It gets
but like,
confusing.
Let's help folks kind of follow along. Starting out with just her first appearances on the Tonight Show and on Herb Alpert and Tier One Rest. The pig puppet was created for the Muppet Show Sex and Violence pilot, where she was going to be in Return to Beneath the Planet of the Pigs, and she just has these like little beady eyes. And they needed a gal singer because they were going to do Old Black Magic on the Tonight Show, and so they needed a guy singer and a woman singer. And so they had to make her glamorous in a hurry. They took the beady eyes off and they put Bonnie Erickson goes to the eyes drawer and pulls out these beautiful blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But she looks funny in those, especially
they're too close together.
Yeah, the Herb Alpert, they're real close together and real low on her head. Folks want to look on Muppet Wiki at Herb Alpert in the T1 dress.
I feel like that was also maybe a character choice for the way she is in that performance, like
right.
the way she's the role she's playing is more of the kind of hapless ingenue,
mm-hmm.
So that was probably the choice. The instinct was to make her look a bit kind of like
younger. Yeah.
Yeah, a little younger and a little naive, something she's never been since.
So then what is the difference when we get to Temptation in 1976?
Well, one of them is that she is, her eyes are further apart.
Mm-hmm.
They've got that sort of slightly predatory look of, you know, like there's that theory around eye placement, or it's not really a theory. It's the thing of like prey having its eyes closer to the sides of its head so that they can see sort of behind them because they're going to be chased, and predators having this kind of like wider spaced but front facing eyes. So they've got binocular vision for tracking prey. I feel like she's got that now. So now she's like, when she knows what she wants,
that's
she
can amazing. Yeah.
Literally jump on
she
it.
She can just go right at it.
Also, she famously has a torn hole at the back of the mouth that was just colored in. And in that sequence, you can see, wait, it's not Frank Els playing it in that sequence, is it?
Is it Richard Hunt?
Well, it's Oz, Oz when she's speaking, and then the singing voice is Hunt. So my interpretation of that is that it's Oz on the day. Because he's doing the dialogue, and then once it becomes a musical number and they're piping it in, then that's Hunt's voice.
Cool. All right. So it's Frank Oz's hand. Yeah, you can actually pause it and see Frank Oz's hand through the torn hole, like the flesh of his hand inside her mouth.
I did not notice that. Yeah, and in Temptation, they give her this dress that she very quickly gets into. Is it satin? The silver satin dress?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, when she had one dress and that was all she had.
Yeah, yeah, that's sort of all first season.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I feel like we still think of Piggy in the... I mean, I've always perceived it as kind of... I guess it is silver. I think it's just because the surrounding vibe of it is so lavender. I've always thought it had like a lavender tinge to it, but maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, the products, I think, a lot of the products did, I think. So.
Yes, yeah, interesting. Oh my God, it's blowing my mind. Her gloves are silver too. What?
Yeah, she doesn't get lavender gloves until second season.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
This really?
I was today years old.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's, I love that there's always something new to find.
Yeah, I have been, obsessed with her costuming. You will find that out very quickly.
Wow.
Yes.
Was there anything else to say about kind of first season Piggy?
I mean, there's probably a lot. I always found it find it a little bit disturbing how visible her neck is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That she's, I mean, the character itself is played much more chaotically with a lot less. She's sort of primarily violent in a way in this, in this telling. She's a very aggressive character. And the way she moves around, her hair's already a mess. That wig has been shipped in. I don't know, in like a Hessian bag. She's also kind of the violence of the way she moves around sort of exposes more aspects of the build.
Mm.
Yeah.
Also, her snout shape is very kind of in keeping with the like Julie Strangepork and Link Hogthrob.
Mm-hmm.
It has that like early kind of very shaped sort of swoops to the front of it. And it's funny because when I look at it, that's the snout I used to draw on her when I was like tiny, because I feel like I just had it in my head that it was that was the shape of Miss Piggy's snout, but it changes so much.
Yeah.
Very quickly changes to something much more subtle than this. Again, it's sort of bringing back that sort of analogy of what I used to draw, how I used to draw as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's the differences that were quickly kind of discarded are also her ears. Always these early ears always remind me of like kind of shriveled like corn chips or something. Like they've got this
slant. Twisted. Yeah.
Yeah. And her eye build is very different. The irises have multiple kind of starry lines coming out from them rather than just the five that it becomes. Her eyelashes are human-sized and they're a little bit sad-looking.
Right.
And her eyelids also are fabric rather than foam, like sort of lush, thick foam,
mm-hmm.
which, makes them look a lot flatter and even though they are the sort of Miss Piggy, predatory seductress kind of eyes, the blue is still a rich blue. They still look more closer to sort of pig eyes than they do human eyes.
Yeah, and the lids don't really stand out as much.
No.
As they're going to.
Yeah.
You saying that about her eyes, this is now officially like my favorite conversation that I've ever had. And then second season, 1977, they just went and redesigned the whole head.
Yeah, I mean, on this one, I would say that they've improved the wig. They've embraced the sort of voluptuous look more. Mm-hmm. She's more sort of chubby and her cheeks are more full, and her neck is now made of foam and not, I guess, fabric as it was before. It had a fleece look before where it would kind of wrinkle. So the foam neck really helps. Yeah, I was actually going to comment on the season one. It's a much cheaper pearl necklace. You can see string between the pearls.
So. They had money. They got money.
Yeah, they got money.
Yeah, it was a hit.
Twice of the plastic pearls.
Well, second season is where she starts to get out of that silver dress. She's now wearing the lavender gloves. She still has the silver dress a lot of the time, but like the first real significant costume change is, what is this, episode 209, the Madeline Kahn episode, where they're in Piggy's dressing room. Gonzo is telling her about how much he loves Madeline Kahn, and she's got like a green robe on.
Yes.
In her dressing room, which is really the first kind of like casual Piggy costume change. That's not, you know, she's also obviously in second season, she's also got the Pigs in Space outfit.
Yes. And it's also, I feel like because it's a, you know, the show is focused primarily on behind the scenes, even though everyone loves the routines. It's like when you think of the Muppet Show, you think of the chaos of making it, not the chaos on the stage. I feel like that leap of having, I mean, I guess all the characters at some point have a sort of dressing room moment, all the main characters, but Piggy's dressing room is probably the most featured, and I feel like that's also, it's not just Piggy in the way she looks, it's Piggy with options all around her that really triggers anyone's brain who's into like a very aesthetic kind of brain to just kind of go, oh my god, there's a whole world I can dress her, I can, like, you know, like, it just, your brain just spirals into like toy play dolls,
right,
fantasy, you know, all of those things. And just being surrounded, I think, by all of those textures, because the Muppets are already so textured.
Yeah.
And then the contrasting textures of Piggy's dressing room, where it's all fabrics, it's all feathers, it's all glittery things. It's just it's so stimulating to the fantasy part of your brain. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh, one thing that always, she's definitely got the evidence of the sort of blade and scissors and, you know, turkey knife kind of mattress foam sculpting process. Yeah. She's got it, particularly around her jaw kind of under her chin in second season. And she's also got a thing that's always bothered me, which is the sort of, I feel like it was an accident, maybe they were out of time and then she just became the puppet, but the sort of line groove across between her nostrils.
Annie Sue has that.
Yeah, like, is it? I've always wondered whether that's deliberate or whether it's a like a slip of the scissors that they just kind of went with.
Oh, and so that's just in season two. That by season three, she doesn't have that anymore.
No,
yeah, it's it's just a strange kind of crinkle in the sculpt.
Don't they go through like a head every few days of filming? Like that, those heads don't last.
They don't.
They switch
them
a lot.
I think now it's about every several months, depending how busy they are. I think they replace them about every half year. But they also have like a West Coast one and an East Coast one. So
it feels to me like first season, second season, that was the pig they had. Because you can see when she's really like squeezing her snout down, when she's angry or upset about something, like you can see kind of like wrinkles in the foam.
Yes.
You can see sort of evidence that it's the foam.
Yeah. When she's performed more aggressively, as she still was here, not so much as season one, but she was still the express. She didn't have the kind of catalog or like vocabulary of expressions that became mm-hmm. the key ones. She was sort of like a, like when you have a, an actor or an actress before they're kind of media trained and they're still kind of pulling odd faces on camera and stuff. Later on, she became more, she knew her best angles and she knew, you know, the key things she could do that still wouldn't either break or distort the puppet in a way that was not silly.
Right. When you get to 1978, the third season, this is the one that actually makes me upset. I have feelings about third season Miss Piggy.
Really? Because
they redesign her again, and my issue is with kind of the length and the orientation of the snout.
The swoop yeah. down. I have kind of a double reaction to this. Also because the third season, that's the one where there's also the classic, much more classic Miss Piggy, this like halfway through the season. No? There's the image from, not Slow Boat to China, what is she singing? Mad About the Frog
on the yeah. piano.
That's a completely different Piggy to the one that is the swoop
you're right.
nose
that is, yeah.
one. And they're both in the same season, which is extra. It's kind of like the two Darrens from Bewitched. It's like yeah. that real yes. gaslighty feeling as a kid. But yeah, she's also a lot more petite, the swoop nose one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have some affection for the that build because it's the one they used in the tests for the Muppet movie,
right?
Where they're out in the you know countryside in England, which you know that test where they did the it's mm-hmm. like Super 8 or something they shot on, and it's
yeah
seeing and how they so look beautiful. In daylight.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I think there was a period where there were a lot of drawings of Miss Piggy. I don't know if the drawings were based on this or if the drawings influenced the direction of this particular build, but they sort of developed, you know, when you're doing sort of cartoon characters, you kind of find the most often the best way to find the character is find the most economical way to draw them. And it feels like that rather than having the nose, the forehead kind of curve into the nose and then kick up at the end, they developed this way of kind of sliding straight down to the forehead and the nose at the same contour, and then it does the kick up at the end.
Right,
and it's sort of an interesting look, but it means that there's something almost mean about it in a different, like a bit meager. Like she looks closed.
Like she's always.
I think it's the best way. Yeah,
like she's always
she's
frowning.
Always doing her angry
yeah.
face.
Yeah, exactly. So third season is when they finally got her out of the silver dress permanently. Calista Hendrickson joined the show in 1977. She's the designer who is going to become specifically Miss Piggy's costume designer forever.
Mm-hmm. Love her.
And the last known appearance of that silver dress, I believe, is episode 308, the Loretta Lynn episode when they're at the train station. After
yes,
that,
I
believe
still
that
here.
Disappears. Yeah. But she starts getting all kinds of nice outfits. There's an outfit that she wears backstage in a few episodes that has, it's black with a flower pattern and then a lavender boa.
Oh, I love that one. Yes.
As far as I know, that comes from the Royal Variety performance that they did in 1970. Okay. They gave all the male characters, which was all of them, they all had nice little tuxedos for that. And then
they
gave Piggy this really nice dress. And so you then see that several times. That comes back. They don't waste that dress.
and look, they don't waste it, neither does she. She'd be economical yet glamorous.
Yes.
she definitely steals costumes from the rack of auditions and
absolutely. Oh yeah, no, once she's got something on.
Yeah, that is an interesting, very interesting season for how it has that shift between the two Piggies. Like it sort of shows both the lack of durability and the advancements in the way that they're building her were kind of coming thick and fast. That idea of like maybe this, maybe that. That very kind of like finding the characters thing for all the characters really, but it's very visible in her.
And it's funny that they're doing that. I love the evolution because I think it leads to very, very soon just more and more beautiful Piggies. But it's funny that it took them, like, this is 3 years now of Piggies going to 4 years. So another thing that happens in 1978, there was another guy who really noticed what was going on with Miss Piggy, and that was Michael K. Frith. So he did a lot of these designs for the Sigma ceramics that started coming out in 1978. And the classic one that I just think is so amazing is the coin bank that has a little coin slot in her cleavage. Michael Frith says that he designed that. He did not expect them to pick that up. He was very surprised when that got all the way through to production and out on the market.
Wow.
That would probably not happen today.
No, I don't think so.
I actually went so far as when I saw one when I was younger, I thought it was a knockoff. Because I was like, surely. And you look at the bottom and you're like, nope.
This is for real. Yeah.
Yeah.
And these ceramic piggies, this is now, I think, kind of, especially with Mike Frith designing them, it's more of an idealized look. It's now like it's something that we don't have to represent this in foam anymore. This doesn't have to be like a puppet that's on somebody's hand. And she's very pretty. And I think that this is kind of the point where she becomes a concept in addition to just being a puppet.
Yeah, I feel like there's something that he's doing with also attaching her to history in a way, like that became a thing with the calendars and everything later as well. Whereas this sort of strategy for romanticizing a character and making them into sort of an eternal beauty by having, you know, she's represented in this kind of like romantic.
So like in the outfit, teapot, this,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
She's got this old fashioned outfit on and an old fashioned hat.
And even just being a ceramic figure is very kind of, you know, early 20th, late 19th century.
Right.
There was a quality to a lot of those classic products that could only come because everything was so in-house back then. That's why it didn't work. So much with the Muppets worked with Jim Henson that stopped working so much without him because he kept such a kind of mom-and-pop tight control over everything.
Right.
But it worked. Because he was the magic in the sauce. That was the thing. And down to, you know, getting, you know, George Lucas clips and Muppet Babies without having to get legal permission. There was just a magic to what he got done. And that's, of course, in the other days, like after that, they need other people like Peter or me to help smooth those points. Because they got books from like years ago. So, yeah. I miss these heavier lids on her, though. I really do. Even though they fixed a lot, her lids are not as heavy as they should be. There's a glamorous look, and they make her look more cartoony. They keep reverting back to this kind of cartoonish look that just bothers me.
Yeah, cartoonish and doll-like as well.
With the shorter lashes?
Well, it's not even that they're shorter, but they're flat.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're back like this instead of forward like this.
And I understand the hair will get caught in them. That's part of the fun. You know? You know?
Do you really think they're thinking about that?
I think so. I think they're thinking of all of the whatever makes your travel easier in the box and whatever. Mm. They don't want any parts sticking out that don't have to be.
I think that's why she starts looking like a product and not a person. You know, she starts looking like something. Yeah, flat, like a doll.
What was it that she was on? She went to the Oscars one year and they pinned her eyes just so weirdly. And I was just like, she's wearing like a designer gown, all of these things. This was like, she was interviewed at the Oscars. She was outside on the red carpet, like Joan Rivers or something. She was doing something.
From when was that?
Oh God, this was probably about maybe 10 years ago, maybe? I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
And she looked great, but her outfit looked great, but how her eyes and her hair were pinned made me sad.
Yeah.
Because they got all the way there and then they missed the most important thing. Yeah.
I wonder if that's like 2012, the BAFTA Awards. Sounds like that might be the thing you're talking about.
Let me see. Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes.
Was that it, 2012?
Jeez, yes. Yeah, no, I Googled it really quick. Yeah, they were advertising Orange, which was part of the Siegel movie.
Yes, yeah, promotion.
Yes, there you go.
That was, it was the BAFTAs. That's so funny that you could that you can say this is the joy of like the three of us talking that you could say like yeah like 10 years ago there's an award show and I'm like oh yeah no I totally
Yes. And it was 11, but yes.
the one where she looks terrible yeah I know that one
but I think it's the placement of her eyes it's that sort of she looks dumb like
yeah
she's not
yeah.
dumb like why do they make her look dumb and she looks naive.
I'm all for giving her more forehead but no it just looks like she did her makeup in the car
you know? Yes totally. I mean, for me, the problem is not the forehead, it's the tiny face under it. It's like the snub little, it's that sculpt that has the really short snout that folds up and almost hits the eyes when it opens. And the rest of the face is just, the proportion's just not there. It's like it's like a little girl version of her almost.
I hope people are following along on Muppet Wiki. You can go to BAFTA Awards.
That eye placement was, I mean, there are better. There's the one with her mouth open, which is absolutely terrible. But then there's, she looks a little better with her mouth closed.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely see the huge bulge from the heel of his thumb in her left side.
Yeah.
Now
you'll never see it.
I know. That's
the magic of Miss Piggy, Danny.
I'm so sorry.
I was just worrying about that. Yeah. I was just very quietly worrying about that.
Yeah, and when you see it moving, you really notice it. But it's like in a front-on shot, it's like his goiter on one side.
You know what? I wanted to know everything about Miss Piggy, and I, you know, be careful what you wish for.
But with our powers combined, you know, it only took one to risk being institutionalized in a meeting with a production designer, and I got her eyes fixed for a minute.
Yeah.
So, like, with our powers combined, maybe we can get a better sculpt that fits his hand.
That's a good call. All right, let's go back to 1979. We're off the Baptist.
I like that era better than now, so yes.
So 1979 for the Muppet movie, I think is the first time that we've actually got a pretty Miss Piggy. There's like, you know, sort of the downward snout of 1978, which I don't like. And then 79, when you look at like kind of her in the beauty queen pageant. Yep.
And this Miss Piggy is also the
gorgeous.
One that is on the piano in Mad About the Frog.
So I guess they did the Muppet movie. They did the Muppet movie like mid third season. So I guess they came back and did more third season with this new puppet.
Yeah.
So what's different about her?
She's made for close-ups. This one is made for really flocking every. It's not even flocked. It is flocked flawlessly. It is such.
Yes.
It's so beautiful. They must have had dozens of heads. That they kept switching or whatever because they're out in the real world filming with this puppet with these this very high quality. I don't understand. That's must have gotten very expensive.
There's something that happens with the flocking that's just, I mean, it happens with fleece as well, but and it's not just the tactility, it's the way it catches light on the edges of contours.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It gives her this like ethereal softness.
Yeah,
like all around her snout, on the edges of her cheeks, like little highlights here and there. They're always the key when I'm drawing her or painting her. They're always the key to like adding that touch more lighting that just make her really feel like the character.
Yeah, I all the Muppets textures, I think they peaked in the early 80s. And by Manhattan, they just kind of went for the most durable puppets.
Mm.
Yes, yeah. One thing that can be definitely spoken about here is eyelid color. The fact that that not only the material changed, but her eyelid color from the first one, it's kind of lavender first season. And then it slowly progresses, which is interesting because her outfit wasn't lavender yet. So the eyelids, the outfit, the lavender gloves followed the eyelids.
Yeah.
But in this film, it's in the Muppet movie, it's kind of this dusky kind of pink color.
Yeah.
And then later on it becomes this very sort of deep, almost maroon magentary kind of color
that's
very vivid. Yeah, mine too. I like it also, it's that softens in the 80s. I also like that look, but that deep one I think really works well. And I always notice in this scene at the beauty pageant, because she's under an awning that's changing her lighting a bit, you kind of, when she first comes out, it looks like she's got no eyelids, Like it's sort of, they blend in a lot more with her own skin. And I think maybe that sort of punch of the darker color later on was what sort of brought it all together as for the eye design.
It's so funny. There is a little element right now of like, we've got a picture that we're looking at of her at the beauty pageant when that light catches her eye just as she sees Kermit. And the three of us a little bit, like we're talking, but a little bit the three of us are just like, oh, wow.
We're just dreaming. We're just,
I was 5 years old seeing this in the theater in 1979. It changed my life. I don't trust Swedish people as much as I used to because they break film projectors.
But the other thing I always noticed about this era is, I think until, because the calendars definitely reflect this as well. Maybe it is just up until the Muppet movie and then after this model of Piggy had changed. But her legs, as much as I love the glimpses of her legs we see here and there, her legs were mangy. Like they had kind of like these, they had really no shape to them. And they had like these sort of, I don't know if they did them with a stitch or not, but the knees are kind of just pulled in so that it gives a point to bend on. They don't have that.
So
sort
when
of like,
is that? The legs that you're complaining about, when?
It's the Muppet movie legs, like where she's sitting on the thing, you can see they're kind of just sort of falling down and with no particular shape.
And stuff some stockings with some.
it really sort of feels like that. And there's also calendars that there's one particular calendar, and I don't know why, because it seems to be later, but it's sailor themed, and she's kind of like she's in Showboat or something.
The Life magazine. World War II, and she's coming down from a parachute.
No, it's not that one. It's where she's standing in a sort of set that has.
She's like a little sailor. Yeah, so she's got a sailor suit on. Okay, that's the first.
Like a little rogue.
Yeah,
rogue.
Yeah, that's the first calendar. The first calendar.
Yeah, and her legs in that are terrible. They're like they have no contour. They're just kind of like these tubes with a sort of weird little knee wrinkle, and they're totally disproportionate with the rest of her body. And I feel like what happened with the legs was related to Michael Frith's drawings, because he always drew her in such a kind of like voluptuous pinup model style, and he always gave her these very shapely legs that are just one of my favorite. Like her leg, like Kermit saying she had sturdy legs in Great Muppet Caper is one of my favorite Muppet lines ever, because it just says so much about him and her. But yeah, her legs just became this. I mean, when I draw her, I think probably people have noticed if they've seen my drawings of Miss Piggy that it's all about this like hourglass and the very sexy legs.
Yeah, she's not. I know they make a lot of pig fat jokes, or they used to. But when designing the figure, when I actually got the chance to help art director, help design the figure, she's not fat. She's curvy. She has these voluptuous curves, and I love that. And that was the secret to making her body look right. Is you lean into that. You lean into the curves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lean into the idea of what she's supposed to. You just lean into what is actually there. And it is just standard, really curves.
Yeah,
Of a woman, and that's really what it is.
Yeah, I mean, like if you remove the torso, because she's just her upper body is just all bust.
Yeah. Yes.
Then
some people like that better. Yes. I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
One thing I would like to point out for the nice people at home is we are using some pictures as references.
Oh yeah.
But when Peter was just describing the sailor suit, Miss Piggy. And what is wrong with her legs? We're not looking at that right now. That just came right out of Peter's.
Right out of Peter's mind. He knows exactly. He knows
exactly what it looks like. Yeah. Exactly what's wrong with it. You're not just have an opinion about it. You're angry about it.
I have.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite conversation I've ever had.
Yeah, I have the advantage of I don't know exactly what a photographic memory is. Because, like, in my mind, it's this thing where, you know, some people have that memory where they, the freaky memory where they remember every date and every moment,
But for you, the visual?
Yeah, the visual. And I think it's partly sort of natural to me from you know, being a kid that was just very visual. I kind of got that from my mom's side, but it's also just been developed from doing storyboards, drawing like thousands and thousands and thousands literally of drawings in my life. So I think it's that kind of memory helps, but it all is also just straight up obsession with this one character and everything she's ever done.
So 1979 going into 1980, I think. Peter, I think you said that Fifth Season Piggy, is this correct? Fifth Season Piggy was the Piggy at her best.
Sweet spot. Yeah. I mean, there are others I really, really like, but I think season five Piggy appears to be a little large for both the proportion in relation to Kermit, but also for Frank Oz's hand. Like he's sometimes it looks almost like his hand is losing a little control in some scenes. But in terms of the proportions of her within her face and her proportions of her head in relation to her body, in terms of the just squish factor of her face, which is so beautiful, and the flocking was so finely done, and the airbrushing was so subtle and perfect. Whereas to compare to the Muppet movie Piggy, the airbrushing is beautiful, but it's still that kind of like her nostrils are very dark, and you can sort of see the delineation a little bit more. Whereas season five is where everything became much more subtle, where the eyes became a lot deeper looking.
The eye placements in four, it looks a little bit more straight. She almost looks bored.
It gives her this kind of like sultry sullenness that I feel like is it's like this combination of that absurdity of the pig in a wig that's sort of the base level joke of Miss Piggy suddenly becomes this heightened thing where it's like you genuinely are looking at her and having like the best kind of Uncanny Valley moment where you kind of like she's a pig in a wig. Like your rational brain just wants to say, this is a ridiculous thing I'm looking at, but you can't help but think of her as this great beauty. Like she really is living it in season five, and her hair is gorgeous and so long and full. And it's also that I feel like before that, she also had this kind of like wheatish honey blonde kind of hair. It was very 70s, almost not quite as auburn, but almost a little bit Sissy Spacek-esque, like in the Muppet movie, especially the scene we were just talking about at the beauty pageant. It's very 70s, kind of smooth and subtle swerves of hair, whereas suddenly in season five it becomes this more ash blonde, kind of more bombshelly and contrasty with her, and just curls and length and just like everything is extra.
Yeah, there's these waves kind of. And this is when they just start giving her new outfits. Like Callista's just working all the time.
Yes.
She gets new outfits, whether she needs them or not, like whether it's for a number or not. Every episode, she's just got something else on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she works hard. So she probably perspires just as hard. just quickly sort of circling back to the eye design thing. I also feel like this is the point where the color, they kind of lock down the color a little bit more. Like the deep blue is right and kind of is consistently that from then on. The depth of color, even though the color changed a bit, but the depth of the color of the eyelids for that extra contrast is there. And I think I might be wrong, but I think it's the first time they used sort of a thicker foam finish as the eyelids to give them a bit more of a three-dimensional structure. So that the lids, because there's the eyes are so fascinating to me, because as a kid I used to make the puppets in general, but I and then I sort of brought that into adulthood. Because of trying to build Miss Piggy puppets, and I tried sculpting from foam. I never did the flocking because I didn't have the money or resources, but I did that. I did try to pat a few times with making a pattern to glue together as her, and then covered that in fabric. Like I tried all these different things. The thing that I always got, I didn't realize at the time, but the thing I was always getting wrong was the eyes, because I gave them sort of a a higher profile than they have. Like, I kind of made them on quite a kind of high dome because her eyes look very dimensional. And it was years later, it was actually as an adult looking at the character that I realized what they've done is it's like a few elements that give it that look. One of them is the thickness of the lid, the actual fabric or foam that's over the lid. It's the placement of the eyelashes, the depth of the black felt that's the base of the eyelashes as well, that kind of thickens up that whole area. It's the black line underneath. It's the way the blue eyes are shaded and everything about that. But one of the really massive key things is the curve of the lash line. Like it, when you look at her, it looks like it's curving over the curved shape of the eye. But it's actually exaggerated quite a lot on a much flatter eye base. So that when you look at it front on, it really looks like the eye is kind of projected further up as a kind of, what would you call that? Like a dome shape, but it's actually quite flat. It's the actual white plastic that's the base of the eye is actually quite flat, but that extra curve on the lash line makes it appear it's almost like a drawing,
forced perspective.
Yeah. Forced perspective joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, if anyone out there is about to build a Miss Piggy eye, that's my advice.
All right. That's fantastic. Well, let's talk for a sec about the Pig Dreams calendar, the 1980 Miss Piggy calendar. Is the first calendar. They never made in the 70s and 80s, they didn't make Muppet calendars. They just made Miss Piggy calendars. And this is the moment for me, I think. 1980, I was 9 years old at beginning of 1980. And I think this must be when I really clocked like Miss Piggy specifically. Like, I was a huge Muppet fan, obviously, and I loved them. I loved all of them. I don't remember like when Miss Piggy became my actual favorite. It might have been this calendar, because looking at the pictures of like the Cleopatra picture and the picture of her on the heart-shaped bed. And
on the bed.
The
oh
July
my God.
4th with the little, and she's got flags and little frogs.
Yeah.
They were like literally the most beautiful things I had ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think I really imprinted on those pictures and on Piggy forever, I think, as like, this is just a gorgeous thing to look at. And I had that on my wall all year long. And I have never
agree.
Stopped. I've never stopped wanting to look at that.
We're in Boomtown now. Boom time now. We're in Miss Piggy's massive stardom.
1981 is sort of peak Piggy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, best version of her ever. 1981. That's what I say. But yes.
So God, like that. Yep. There's 81 is the CoverGirl calendar, which is so beautiful. And then Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, which was absolutely extraordinary just in terms of how many pictures there are, how lush and extravagant they are. They were just having so much fun because they could have done less. They could have done a lot less. And people would have bought the book. People would have enjoyed the book.
For sure.
They just went, it's as many costumes as possible, as many shots, as many like crazy setups, really luxurious and extravagant.
And even the soft cover feels so extra, but when you have the hard cover, it feels like an art object. It's such a keepsake.
Do you have thoughts on so was this 1981 Piggy? I guess before we get to Great Muppet Caper, like just the calendar and Guide to Life, was there anything special about Piggy here?
One thing I would say is that there are two different Piggies in Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. There's one with a square snout that has much less kind of contouring to her face sculpt. And there's one with a much more curvaceous snout and lower lip that has much more delineation between her cheeks and her sort of broader shape of her head. I like them both a lot. I'm not even sure which one I like the most.
Yeah.
I really like the very contoury face. because it just has, it's a bit more Michael Frith looking, like it's more of a complex, the contour is just more complex and kind of have a kind of elegant, illustrious sort of look.
Mm.
But the other one is the one that's featured more. It's the one that's on the cover.
Mm.
The small square snout. It's kind of a bit less. It also, I think, has longer flock on it. Mm. Oh, this was also the first, when I was trying to build them as a kid, this was the first time I really noticed that her skin, quote-unquote skin texture,
mm-hmm.
was impossible for me to make because I had no idea what flocking was. I mean, even though I had a few toys, in retrospect, I had a few toys that had a bit of very fine velvety flock that they have on plastic toys at times. I didn't realize they were the same thing. I didn't know what the process was. So I would look at that front cover image till my eyes bled, trying to figure out how it was both foam and fabric at the same time. Like you can see the holes because it's so high res. You can see the foamy holes through the flock, but then you've got this fur texture coming towards you and you're just like, is this made with magic? Like, what is this stuff? But yeah, so the two different piggies in it, both of which are very much kind of, I'm happy with either of them. They're so beautiful looking. I think they're unified by the eye design, which is this basically exactly the same for both. The positioning's slightly different, but the very sort of thick lid that's very heavy and the eye placement and the really lush lashes.
Yeah, I guess this is really like what you were describing before of the very like dimensional eyelid. Yeah.
And you really can explore it in these because you see there's that the one with the jeans on, it's kind of like book shields.
Yeah.
That one's a really good example of the directional eye thing because she's looking kind of away from us. And her eyes look like, it almost feels like they might be animatronic. If you didn't know the full dimension of the characters, it looks like her eyelids are in a completely different position than they are front on because of that kind of directional build. Yeah.
There's also, this is the era, I think, for her ears that you seem to draw the most. It's the last time they literally have that subtle curve in the front.
Yes.
And I love that. They lose it in Caper, even though that's almost a perfect puppet. They lose that and it starts to become more rabbit-like. They, I know, like with product design, we tried to give her more in the...
I know, Peter, you sent me the sketch that you made for the Muppets, and a lot of that sketch was about like the curve of the ears.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of with that consultation on the puppet build. I was working against this. I asked them whether they could find an archival mold and make a head from a previous mold, and the impression I got was that they had the current mold and maybe they had like a slightly older one. I actually don't know what they chose to do in terms of getting the mold, but I realized everything I could do had to be on a mold that they were already using.
Right.
So then it became more about focusing on the eye build and position and how that influenced the width of the height of the forehead. And then that would also be the wig position that would give her more forehead. And then the ears, which had slowly crept forward, giving her way more of a rabbity look, not just because they stick up, but because they're right above her hairline.
Right.
I got them to put them back so that they could get the wig back a little bit further and they could the ears could be more like, you know, longer, further back like a pig's ears are, but also just give her more sort of length from the sides. She didn't have this sort of snub-nosed, flat-faced kind of look. But yeah, it was also trying to draw them so that the ears were curved forward. I don't think they really did that, but they did, I think, get that position a little bit better so that she had a little bit of forehead and she had more of that, like when she pulls her angry expression or when she talks, there's a lot more room for a snout to kind of make those expressions because the eyes are slightly higher up and then the hair's slightly further back and the ears are slightly further back. So there's just more space for expression, I guess, and more of a sense of a profile.
Yeah, and you can really see here, I'll give you guys the Muppet Wiki page for Miss Piggy's Guide to Life. If you scroll down to the gallery, there's a bunch of photos and you can really see in these the curve of the ears. Yeah, I hadn't noticed that until you're bringing it up, but
yeah, they sort of cup forward in this really, like both a piggy way, because I mean obviously pig's ears look very different, but they still kind of close over themselves in a way that isn't this rabbit like straight up thing. It's just another curve. Like, I mean, she's made it. She's like all curves. And the idea that she has these ears that are just very direct and up, it just doesn't really fit her. Mm. She's all circles.
Right.
Yes. When was this this additional one with the hat? When was that published? The cover, when they replaced the cover with this more modern.
Oh, that's a very crappy later. I think it's maybe late 80s.
Yeah, that looks like a Miss Piggy's Hollywood kind of.
Yeah.
Whenever I bully anyone into buying an old copy of Guide to Life because it'll make their life better, I always tell them, do not be fooled. Do not get this one. Because also that one features a lot of photo. I think it's on lesser quality paper from memory as well, or maybe it has some good quality pages and others not. It also has the black and white photos kind of, they're not as grayscale. They're sort of more contrasty. It's just bad. Yeah.
All right. If you're going to get a copy of Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, and you should.
Yes.
The original.
Insist on the original.
Yeah. Soft cover is fine.
So it's got to be. It's got to be that original.
Yeah.
So great Muppet Caper.
Yes.
She is beautiful, but I can see, like you say, that the ears start to stick more up.
That's the one that I helped base the revisions for Diamond Select on. Was mostly that, because that is, well, that's still, you know, the same time as season 5 when they were filmed. It's the same era right there. It's the same time, of course. Probably different puppet, but that I feel like the wheels start to slightly fall off the wagon from after that film.
After Caper. Yeah.
I would say, well, I say Muppets Take Manhattan. I like some pictures of that puppet, but I'll tell you, I do not like that build. I don't like the hair. I don't like anything about it. I really don't. I feel like after that, she became more cartoony, is how they made her build her and made her look. And I feel like a lot of the characters became more durable after that, because it was a time thing. Jim Henson was focusing on other things, and he needed puppets that he didn't have to keep, you know, refurbishing. I think maybe that's it. Yeah.
So that's starting around 1984 with Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah, I would say that for me it was. For me it was. I'm not sure about what Peter will think, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I think Muppets Take Manhattan, I hated that hair when I was a kid. I just needed her to have, you know, this sort of like tortured perm.
Yeah.
That just isn't,
right. I call it's
just
a like, fright wig.
Yeah. it's just froth that doesn't really do much. It moves a little bit, but it's not like this whip around hair that gives so much extra.
That is part of the idea. I heard there's a talk with Polly Smith and Calista Hendrickson.
Oh, yes. I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they said like the perm just made life easy, because for all of the previous versions of the character, she said you had to have somebody standing right there, ready to grab her. Because when Frank is done with the take and puts his hand down, she's upside down and it ruins the hairstyle. And so they have to catch her. And so once she had the perm, they didn't have to worry about that. So they loved the perm.
Yeah. Well, historically,
and she kept it for the whole 80s.
Fashion and pain.
Look, for me, I wish they'd stuck with the hair that I love, and I think that Miss Piggy should be the diva she is and need that much help.
Yeah.
But with the perm, retrospectively, I've kind of come to love it, in the sense of, like, I don't think she looks optimal in that film, but I do think she looks pretty good. And the film itself, as a kid, was never my favorite, but I did really enjoy it. So for me, that perm has become kind of like maybe also in contrast to later hairstyles where it was just like a plastic bob that was just like,
yeah,
literally looks like it came from a dime store. The fact that it is like, you know, a fright wig, it might be, but it's sort of, it's doing what it's aiming to do, which is to look
it's
at
this
like this, yeah, frothy mm-hmm. 80s perm. So yeah, it doesn't offend me as much as later things.
So we're talking a little bit about Miss Piggy being a diva and being camp. And that's something that we haven't really, that is important, I think, for this discussion that we haven't really talked about yet, of camp kind of as a sensibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Being an appreciation of the artificial, of mm-hmm. the false, of the like heightened mm-hmm. reality.
Some might say the deluded.
But all the Muppets are deluded. That's the thing.
It's true. Yeah, that's true.
What does camp mean for you, especially in terms of kind of how Miss Piggy fits in?
I'll jump in. I had an interesting conversation years ago with a guy who runs a festival here that I was referencing. I was talking to an ex who's a filmmaker that we've worked together and made things together, and he'd forgotten about it. But I was telling him about this moment where we were all out drinking after a screening, and we started talking about, I was probably talking about Day of the Locust or some very, very camp, very widely regarded as a mess by mm-hmm. essentially, you know, like Empire magazine reading film bros. So we were having this conversation and we couldn't get across to this guy the meaning of, not the meaning of camp, he could sort of technically understand it, but the feel of camp, like mm-hmm. the need for it and the substance of it, I guess, like the value of it, because he couldn't really understand what it is to approach life as a series of codes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like when people are kind of aligned with their nature and nobody's mm-hmm. policing them for their nature, they, and they're not feeling like an outsider in any sort of severe way, they're not looking at the world as a series of tricks they need to learn. Right. They're just fitting with those tricks. It just seems like truth to them. So mm-hmm. they don't really get in their head this very early idea that everything is a fantasy, even the most dull things, or dull to me at least, things like someone playing golf, like you're in drag, playing golf drag, you're in golf drag, you know?
Right.
So I think when you've had that outsider perspective and you come, like as a kid, you have that instinct about yourself that like things are not, you don't quite fit the codes that you're being given, and therefore they look like codes to you.
Here I am at age 9 and I just love looking at Miss Piggy as Cleopatra. This is not.
Yes. Yeah.
This is not a normal boyhood.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And when you have that experience and you have that need for looking for things that not only you want to look at, but also those things that are steeped in a similar fantasy facade that has like that to other people has this, just looks like sort of frou-frou, you know, distraction, and to you looks like truth, you know, like you look at it and go, I need to gaze at those lavender gloves because they make some kind of weird sense to me. Like they meet my soul where it needs to be met.
Why does she always wear opera gloves? Yes.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
what is she
ashamed of her hooves? But yeah, it's that thing, I think, where all the Muppet characters have their sort of delusions, their aspirations, because it's inherently about sort of failing up, characters failing upwards, or characters that are chaos that's found other chaos, so they find some warmth and family. But I feel like with Piggy in particular, she's not only an expression of that usual aspiration that the Muppets have, she also kind of resents the context of the Muppets themselves and feels like an outsider in that context.
Right,
and
even in this group.
Even in this group. And she's never, like, because she's a narcissist, she thinks it's their fault. even if she's being a complete jerk, she still thinks it's their fault.
Yeah.
So, like, she's easily hurt, but only in her own feelings. She's she can come back to a sense of family, but it's like very brittle and kind of only when the stakes get really high.
Mm.
But she projects this fantasy that's even beyond the escapism of the Muppets themselves. She's trying to escape the escapism. So it's like she's so many levels of fantasy that she just, and aside from, you know, obviously just being this super femme kind of super glamorous presentation, just the fact that she's this outsider that's working so hard to have almost a defensive force field of glamour around her. It's very relatable, I think, to a lot of young queer people and a lot of just misfit people, like I think a lot of just cis girls who are kind of, maybe they don't fit the beauty ideal, or maybe they don't fit the someone's program, what they're supposed to be, and they suddenly look at this very glamorous, very empowered, very violent at times, very just energetically herself kind of character. And they see the possibility of that. They see the fact that you could actually move through life. Maybe it doesn't take like delusion and narcissism, but you can move through life with being as grand as you want to be while feeling safe.
I always felt like camp is a safe area where you can always say the things that you're not allowed to say in your normal voice. And that's the thing. And that's what the Muppets represent to me, particularly, you know, Miss Piggy, is she says whatever she wants to say. She's in Piggy Drag. She can, you know, Frank Oz can say, the thing with Frank Oz in interviews is you see the real guy come out and he's frustrated because most people bore him because most people are stupid and boring. And you can see it. I love his interviews for that because he's honest.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't always agree with what he has to say, but I like that he says it. And it's like, he just says what's on his mind. But as Miss Piggy, he can say that and still be light. You can tell he makes the host uncomfortable, particularly when they don't do their homework, because he gets angry. He's just like, I'm wasting my time. He doesn't like to, I don't feel like he likes any of that stuff. If he liked it, he'd do a lot more of them. So that's he's had his time in front of the camera. He likes to be behind the camera.
Right.
But as far as that, it's camp for me is you're allowed. It's like going to a drag show. That's why when someone puts on, you know, drag makeup and a wig, they can say whatever they want to say. When they take it off, most of these people become the most shy people and reserved people, the most boring people in the world. It is it is strange, and but I love that. It gives you permission.
Well, and so there's something else about camp that I think is interesting, which is the element of kind of making a conscious choice to enjoy something. So when you're talking about like Day of the Locusts, for example, like taking something that is artificial, that is potentially in bad taste, and you have to kind of make that for something to be camp. You're kind of making this conscious choice. I am going to love this thing.
Yeah.
And when that click happens in your head, it creates a deeper love somehow.
Yes.
Because you've made that choice to love this thing.
Yes. Because you've created like a it's become like a code that becomes analogous for yourself in a way. Like you kind of feel it in
a deeper way.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a stage before that where you're drawn to these things that are camp because of that outsider perspective, and that your brain's kind of tenderized towards it because you already see the falseness in boring things. And you know, you see someone's watching a war movie going, oh, it's so truthful and blah blah blah, or it's so like, you know, serious or dramatic or whatever, and you're like, yeah, it's fine, whatever, but
there's
like,
no musical numbers, what are we
doing? No, exactly. I'm gonna go watch this thing that's just, you know, was a flop and was like, you know, like lambasted by critics, but it has its own fucking magic, and I have my own magic, and my own magic hasn't been understood since childhood. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it gets to that thing where you're seeing this mirrored outsider status in camp objects a lot of the time.
Right. So where should we go back from Miss Piggy? We talked about the perm.
We talked about Manhattan.
Talked about Manhattan.
Wait, did we talk about Manhattan enough? I don't know.
No,
I feel
we
like
have not.
it's not
Obviously,
my
we have
favorite
not.
film, so I
Obviously, we have not.
don't.
So
I know.
one thing that I think we alluded to earlier, I think, is just Piggy's size in The Muppets Take
Yeah.
Manhattan.
It's bigger.
She is bigger, and the face
Yeah.
is heavier.
Yes.
The pear shape is more pronounced for Muppets Take Manhattan
Yes.
than it was before.
Yeah, and her eyes are also a little bit sort of dopier, like they're a little bit more tilted in a more plaintive kind of way.
But one of the things about Miss Piggy from this era, particularly back going back to the wig, is it wasn't just the movie. She was stuck in that wig for the rest of the
Yes,
80s. And I just was bored with it. I couldn't believe that she wasn't. You know, but of course, Frank Oz loved the fact that it gave him freedom, you know, from having to have someone fuss over her all the time. But yeah, I don't know. It was so boring. You could just tie it back in a ponytail, do something.
Late 80s. I've got a couple pictures here for folks who are playing along on Muppet Wiki. 1989 Emmy Awards Piggy and the Disney Christmas Special, also from 1989. Is this the sat-on Piggy that you were
Oh,
talking about?
God.
These are
Yes. So I'm not so
dark.
the awards ones, and yeah, both of them actually. That's because honestly, that doesn't even look like a decision to me. That literally looks like it's been in too small of a suitcase with too many other things. Like that is a flattened head, and it's flattened like lengthwise, which is so surreal.
Yeah, there's something where it might actually be like a smaller head,
It
like a
looks like it's
thinner head.
shrunk chemically, something like it's
Something.
been exposed to something. Like it just looks really wrong.
Yes. See, this is what I don't like since Disney bought them up. You know, they happened this that they had bad
Yes.
puppets sometimes back then. People forget, but they always say,
They
oh, it's
majorly
the
dropped the I mean, also, I
they
mean,
yes.
let's just talk about like
It's
either of those weeks is appalling, but the
awful. Yes.
friggin' awards, the Emmy Awards ones.
Yeah.
Okay, so
These are big.
here are the things that are right with this puppet.
That'll take long. That'll take sure.
She's wearing lavender gloves. There are some feathers near her, and her eyelids are all right. Her eyelids. I'll give her to her eyelids. Her eyes, unfortunately, are looking in two completely different directions. They're too pale, and they kind of look like I don't know, like albino goat eyes or something. Like there's just something really off-putting and slightly satanic about them.
Well, they're too small, right? It feels like they are
Yeah,
too
they're
small for
too small for
her
the
body.
head. Yeah.
She had a moment when she cut her own hair. What happened before this? I want to know. Did
Yeah,
they
she's got
have an
these weird
argument?
bangs.
She has bangs. That's a cry for help.
She got stuck in a thresher machine. Yeah, that wig is just not, for a start, it's not her personality, but it's also, it really looks like it was found like in an alley. And
Or actually
her,
worse, like a Halloween costume shop. Oh,
yes,
God.
totally,
Yeah,
totally.
it's one of
Her
them.
ears, yeah, very Party City vibes. Her ears are kind of an okay shape, actually, but they are growing out of her eyebrows. Not that she has them, because she doesn't have eyebrows, but her ears are so close to her hairline, and her face is tall and narrow from the front angle, like
It's
sort of
just
fish,
so
like a
weird.
fish.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yes.
it's appalling. It's like it's
It's real rubber.
But then the Disney Channel special looks even worse. Because they're, oh
Yeah.
God, I don't know
Because
how they top that.
the eyes are just
Well,
misplaced and kind
the
of.
ears are almost like human ears growing out the side of her head.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just
Like
weird.
how did a straight man put this thing together? Like nobody with an eye got near that puppet.
No, that
I
looks
love
pretty awful.
this part of the conversation just because it's obviously like the mirror image of how much we were like just gazing at you know the piggy calendar pictures, just going, oh, so beautiful.
Yes.
And now I've
Yes.
got, you know, we've got these two pictures in front of us, and the three of us are just angry.
Yes.
Yeah,
Kill it with
I mean, fire. Burn
we're like
it.
bubbling over with it, that when you get Piggy wrong, when you
Oh.
really, and the 1989 Emmy Awards, when you get Piggy wrong,
Yeah.
it's like there's nothing right in the world for us,
And you
the three of
realize
us
the
at least.
level of investment you have. It's like when you have like a favorite actress or diva who has a little too much surgery, a little like get something done that's not right. And it just throws your whole like world compass off for it when you're looking at it. Yeah,
I won't mention
this
names,
one.
but yes, there's several. There's the kind of
Yes,
few things done,
yes.
and you're just like, oh, I love you, and I wish you hadn't done
Yeah.
that. Or you need a friend with you to tell you no, honey.
Can you throw a few million towards getting a few things undone?
Yeah, God. We love you for you. You're fine.
Yeah,
Yes,
no, but
exactly. Oh, God.
hit Control Z on that surgery if you could.
Let's get to the next one so I don't cry.
1992.
She is
1992.
so much better in these pictures.
And the Muppet
Yes,
Christmas
she
Carol.
is.
Yeah, she's back. She does have these rabbit ears in Christmas Carol. Like, and
She
I
does.
am now recognizing that.
And she's definitely, this is, I feel like this is the first time, even though it's not necessarily my preference, this is the first time the like cutesy Miss Piggy head looked really right. Like they got, it's a choice that they did correctly, even if it's not my favorite version of her.
So why is this
Yes.
a cutesy piggy?
I think just because it's got the sort of thicker, like the curves are less cornery than they were when she was like 1980, like 78 to 80. Like they're everything has this very beveled edge, and she's just a bit, she's still got this, it's not short in the mutant way it was a year 3 years before this, but it is like still that short, stubbier snout that is also a little more juvenile looking, less of like Barbara Streisand elegant nose that I'm never changing, and more like, yeah, juvenile, I guess is the best way I could describe the
And her
proportions.
cheeks and her chin, yeah, rounder
Yeah.
without as much, without as much kind of like detail.
She
She
looks prettier here.
does look pretty.
Yes. Yes. And she has less gullet. She has less volume underneath her mouth.
She's supposed
And
to play, she's playing someone who's poor, so she has.
she's method acting, starving herself for months. Unlikely.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is such a beautiful film. I know it's period in terms of the wig, but I still wish she had a little more hair. And the little, again, it's period, but the little sort of curled bangs are kind of,
Those are bothering you.
yeah, if I was choosing a hairstyle for her, this one wouldn't be it, but it's very cute for the character.
Going into Muppet Treasure Island in 1996, it's, I feel like this is the point where Miss Piggy becomes scenery, partly. Just because of like the enormous outfits that she has and the way that she's kind
Yes.
of like carried in with this insane like feather headdresses and just feathers everywhere. This is
And her
it.
entrance is delayed as well. Like
Oh,
she's not really a big part of it
for
too,
a
in a way.
real long time.
This is like her biggest drag queen number ever with this headdress,
Yeah.
man.
Well, it
Wow.
just it kind of it feels to me like it goes beyond sort of costume and becomes like kind of a special effect.
Yes.
Yes, it becomes a kind of live action version of the calendars in a way. Like her, she's sort of an installation more than a character. I mean, I do kind of love it. I think facially the eyes have started slipping down into that sort of dopey look again. I just want to straighten them. It's like when her eyes, because it's kind of an okay eye build, but when they're on those kind of angles, I just want to reach through the screen and fix them. It's so frustrating. And you also see in that one the even stubbier snout, like it's gone another stage.
It's just gonna keep going snubby. It's gonna just keep going snubby and snubby.
Yeah, it's just getting those nose jobs.
Do you think that there is some snout self-hatred on the part of like
a little bit
of the puppet builders? Like, yeah, they're a little worried about.
Oh, you know, I thought you meant of Bibi's. I thought you meant of her having like her own.
I think you get so close to something, you know, as an artist, I will tell you, there's just a point where you just keep reworking something till it stops making sense. And I can understand this, people that keep rebuilding these characters, because they don't always get rebuilt. They get refurbished and then some parts get rebuilt. And I can tell you, you know, there's a certain point in my own compositions where I have three last things that I want to do. And then I pick one of them, and then I let the rest go. Because if it's ever truly finished, it's beyond finished, and it's ruined. And you just gotta stop. But I feel like when they keep doing these, it just becomes a facsimile of a facsimile of a facsimile, and it loses its spark. And I feel like that's what happened with some of the Muppet Bills, particularly Miss Piggy, during this time, during the late 90s and early aughts. It just was bright. One thing about the Muppets builds that I haven't mentioned yet is I remember going to Carol Spinney's book reading many, many years ago in the early aughts, and he was talking about doing a right hand for, I believe, Ernie. And then he at the end of the scene, when they're breaking, Jim Henson kicks over Ernie on the floor to get around him, and then Carol Spinney apologizes to the character, and then Jim looks like at him like he's insane. And he explained to me how he did. They were never precious. They looked at them as props to get through a scene. So particularly when you're talking to performers about the different things that change with the puppets and the characters over time, they don't notice it or care as much. They're thinking about the performance. They're thinking about so many other things.
Yeah.
And they see the work that goes into them. Because even the most, you know, disappointing looking puppet to us is still amazing and how it's put together. I mean, these things cost tens of thousands of dollars. It's a lot of man hours. It's a lot of things.
And everything is hand. And a lot of people. Hand done.
But that's the thing, is like they see them as props. We fans, you know, and then the wiki page that say, you know, like Zoot through the years or whatever. I'm addicted to that. I will go back and look at that all of the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, that's my favorite Zoot. And but I swear, it's like, when did his nose get so yellow? But it's that sort of thing. But the performers don't see them from that perspective.
I think it's also just a factor that comes from the team. Like, it's that outsourcing thing, but it's also not having people like Michael Frith or Bonnie or Callista, who have eyes on the character, who really know it. And they know it from a pure design point of view, but also they know the character themselves and how the visuals contribute. Because Frank Oz, obviously, he's a visionary in a lot of ways, but he's not a designer. He's a performer. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to be obsessing over those aspects the way someone... It's the same thing, like if you're on set on a film and you have the camera department, the art department, and everyone's got to wait while the camera gets right, but also everyone's got to wait while somebody sets the curls of the actress or makes sure that a dress is aligned correctly or whatever. When you don't have that team... what's the camera looking at? So I feel like they just need a tighter team around them that is hyper focused on one particular aspect, like the design or the build or the specifics.
So like what are the main things that go wrong that determine whether something's a good or a bad Miss Piggy puppet?
I would say, for me, the main two elements, I mean, as long as the sculpt is somewhat right, I feel like the two elements that really affect the way she looks are her hair and her eyes. I think even if you have like a sort of average sculpt, like if you take for example the season 3 weird snout, Miss mm-hmm. Piggy.
Yeah.
The eyes are beautiful. The hair's beautiful. Even though that sculpt is the most unlike her whole canon of how she looks, you still kind of go, you connect because she's swinging around this gorgeous hair and she's got these really lush eyes.
Right.
But when you have, you know, a pretty well-shaped face, but the eyes are kind of wall-eyed or doll-like or flat-looking, or the wig is, you know, an ugly bob perhaps, or a weird froth of cheap hair, then you definitely kind of, it throws you. Even if the overall face shape looks okay, you're kind of like,
So the wig's got to look kind of lush.
Yeah, and it's got to move as well. I feel like there's been a lot of Miss Piggies where the secondary movement thing hasn't been sufficient to give her violence and her kind of languidness, and all of it's not really played out by what she's wearing and by her hair. So it kind of just looks like sort of she just looks sort of like a block without all that stuff swinging around. Without that moving.
Yeah.
It seems like both of us hate the flat iron bob wig. You brought it up a couple times, Peter. I hate that thing. That made a very, the silicone wigs just made a huge difference.
Yeah,
that was look more like a puppet and less. I don't know. Yeah.
When did that come in? Is that like mid 90s?
I think they got synthetic in the late 80s, perhaps, but I think they might have been a blend. And then they just got like mid 90s. They started getting very plasticky looking, like really ugly under the studio lights, and just the hair all kind of like almost looks like it's like melted together. The way it sits just doesn't have air in it. It doesn't have flow or movement.
Did it get better after that? Like, was this an era of kind of the flat bob hair, or
the quality improved in? Like it sort of fits and starts, the quality improved, but they even had long versions that I prefer, but still didn't really like where it got into that sort of equally flat ironed long look, like long but not long enough and without any bounce to it, still sort of flat to her head. But I think, dare I say, the moment it improved was the Muppets, the Jason Segel Muppets. They spent some real, I don't know if they spent real money on it, but they definitely spent some taste on it. Like it's their hair, you know, when you think of her coming in with that sort of 70s flick, bleach blonde kind of 70s flick, when she's wearing, so I think she's wearing a tweed sort of suit and a hat. Mm-hmm. She comes into the studio and she has a big arrival and she's got a bags and everything, and the hair's just bouncing so crazy, and it's like it just nails it. It's just that's her. Like, she's too much. You can't have just enough or almost enough Miss Piggy. She's got to be the curls, the accessories, the eyes, the
the eyelashes.
There's this great great line from a great like sort of phrase that I remember. When I was a kid, I was a big Michael Jackson fan, and he was talking about producing songs, and they were talking about all of the hooks in Billie Jean.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you can pull out multiple layers of that song and find a new pop song from every single one, and a lot of his songs are like that. And he would have this phrase he'd use in the studio with Quincy Jones, where he'd say, "Put the jelly on the jelly." And the idea was, you can't have enough good things. Like, just more is more, layer on. As long as every element is strong, like it's, I feel like it's when extra things get too much, it's because you're putting too many crappy things together, or you're trying to compensate for one thing with another. But there's also, I'm going a little bit of a tangent here, but there's also a interior designer named, I think his name's Tony Duquette from memory.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a book called More is More. I think these things might be slightly off in the way that I think it is More is More, but it's this amazing, he was a celebrity or a interior designer to celebrities throughout the late 50s, all the way into the 70s, maybe the 80s too.
Mm.
And his style is just, it's like highly curated antique store. Like, it's so layered. There's so many things in there, but your brain just explodes with how well put together it all is and how it is somehow harmonious,
mm-hmm.
but also that there's always things to find. Like, you're kind of never bored looking at it. And I feel like Miss Piggy's like ultra luxe look, like especially in the calendars, mm-hmm. is the best example of her looking
Of
extra, but like so designed. There's mm-hmm. nothing extraneous, but there's still a lot.
Right.
And I feel like that's the sweet spot for her.
Jamie Carroll, Peter Savieri, thank you so much for spending. People won't necessarily know because I'm going to edit these to like a normal human length. Thank you. Thank you both for spending 100 hours with me.
Yeah.
Talking about Miss Piggy. I have loved this so much. This is like my favorite. It's my favorite conversation. Both of them are my favorite conversation ever.
It feels like a Piggy exorcism. I've gotten it out of me now.
yeah. But it'll just come back.
We'll just get some more. Yeah. We'll refill. But this has been this has been so special for me. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
And kissy kissy, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast, brought to you by my friends at toughfigs.com. In the next episode, there's a very special interview with Miss Piggy's original creator, Bonnie Erickson. So do not miss that. Thank you to Johannes and Tough Pigs for giving me space to do this absolutely crazy thing. And I also want to give special thanks to the editors of Muppet Wiki. This podcast would not be possible without Muppet Wiki, so thank you. If you have comments or questions or you know stuff about Miss Piggy that you'd like to share, you can write to me at fantasticmisspiggy@gmail.com. That's fantasticmisspiggy@gmail. And please do. It's been really nice hearing from people. I'm also on X at FantasticMissP, or come and join us on the Tough Pigs Discord. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next time.
Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Woolworth doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but love.